Back to order. Okay, now we have the opposition. Someone, okay, who's going to speak on that behalf? Are all those that are wanting to speak to please come? Would you all like to come up then now again to be? We'll swear you in again for the record. Those that would like to, please.
And just to clarify what we said before.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. The SIR rebuttal is designed for specifically the things that were brought up in the rebuttal. So if we can limit it to that, the board's been here a while. We've heard a lot of testimony, and we do want to give you all a chance to speak. So state your name and address for the record.
My name is Barb Girk, 33298 Laguna Drive, Ebony Beach, Delaware.
Okay, and we'll swear you all in at once, so if I can get your names and addresses.
Kathy Vengazzo, 4 Briarcliff Court, Ocean View, Delaware.
Ron Girk, 33298 Laguna Drive, Bethany Beach.
Greg Cox, Unit 4, Sea Pines Village.
Thank you.
John Heffley, 36870 Janigan Drive, Delaware.
Thank you. Do you all swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
Thank you. And I guess Ms. Girk was stepped up first, so we'll
roll it up there.
Good evening. I will really try to make this as brief as possible, I promise. All right. The applicant cannot meet its burden, AT&T, showing that the existing structures within a 2-mile radius of the proposed tower are available for co-location, substantiating the need for such a tower at the proposed location, and proving that the proposed cellular tower and associated infrastructure will not substantially affect adversely the uses of adjacent and neighboring property. At least the following facts and reasons demonstrate that no reasonable member of the board could even find the applicant has met its burden. First of all, Brock Riffle said that there is a gap in coverage. And yet, AT&T, the site that they have, said that there is a gap in coverage. Sussex Shore is 1.57 miles away. How does AT&T know that there is a gap in coverage? Number one, this is my first point. AT&T has not actively looked for a viable placement site for any of the antennas since 2009, and actually in well over a decade. As such, the application is fatally defective as to the requisite showing of need for the proposed tower at the proposed location. Mr. Zolna came up here, and he said that this week he talked to Verizon, and they want to jump on the tower with them at this site. Since 2009, Tom Zolna, AT&T's purported site locator, has not looked any further for locations that might serve its needs. As such, AT&T admits it cannot substantiate the need for the proposed tower at the proposed location, and it has not investigated any sites in these years. On September 21st, 2009, in case number 10491, Zolna states, I have talked with or looked at approximately 33 properties. Case number 10491, transcript page 6. Then on March 21st, 2011, in case 10778, Zolna states, the second page of the handout I gave you is a map. It's a bit larger. It shows approximately 33 different sites that I looked at in the course of the process. The case number 10778, transcript page 16. On November 18th, 2013, in this case, Zolna once again stated he looked at 33 sites, not one single site until Verizon. Additionally, AT&T and Zolna submitted documents in the present case purporting to demonstrate they pursued alternate sites. However, upon review of this documentation, it is apparent that this purported evidence and documentation is outdated, with dates from several years ago and as far back as 2001, and they fail to demonstrate pursuit of alternate locations. As such, AT&T cannot substantiate a need for the proposed tower at the proposed location, because it is not clear whether the owners of the locations AT&T admits works would be interested in allowing a cellular location on their property. They have not checked or investigated alternatives in years, and even old correspondent never actually got to the intended recipients, If you look in the file, those were undelivered, and no one ever sent another letter out or called them. In fact, they cannot credibly assert whether any of these sites it identified are even available. Finally, even when the application documents themselves filed with Sussex County demonstrate that AT&T has made no efforts to investigate alternative locations in years, AT&T submitted its application, a letter which it relies on to purportedly substantiate a need, in November of 2013, dated July 28, 2009. Let me get a drink of water just for a second, please. A time almost 5 years earlier. As such, AT&T cannot credibly assert that it can substantiate a need, and its application is fatally deficient. Secondly, AT&T plainly admits in its testimony and documentation there are three existing alternative tower sites to the proposed new site that are within a two-mile radius of the proposed site in this application. As such, AT&T admits that it cannot satisfy the requirements of the 115-194.2, as it cannot show that the existing structures within the two-mile radius of the proposed location are not available for co-location. This application is therefore fatally defective and must be rejected. Mr. Forson brought Brock Riffle up today, and in Mr. Riffle's testimony, he's the person who's tasked with network design of the AT&T system, clearly testified in case 10491 and again in the present case that there are three existing cellular tower locations and a water tower that are available to AT&T, all of which fall within the two-mile radius of the proposed site and are now available to AT&T. The landlord was willing to work with or lease. And there was testimony in that with Ms. Scott, who was the former attorney. And Ms. Scott said, what about one of these things Mr. Zola and I talked about, possibility of co-locating? In other words, putting antennas on existing structures. And Mr. Zola indicated that he couldn't find anything suitable within the search. Is that something we can further discuss in terms of efforts? And Mr. Riffle said, yes. There were some existing structures that would be suitable. And when I say suitable, they're suitable from a real estate perspective, meaning the landlord was willing to work with AT&T. And if it was a site that could fill AT&T's radio frequency needs, that means that there were three existing lattice towers in the two-mile radius. Additionally, there was one water tank in that area. All three of those...
Mr. Just a question for you. You're talking about Mr. Zolna and his testimony, correct?
Yeah, and then, right.
And if I recall...
Well, now this is Mr. Riffle.
Mr. Riffle, okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure, because Mr. Zolna, I believe, did not testify about that this evening.
Was asking Mr. Zolna, but Mr. Riffle did say that there were the... So that's Mr. Riffle that's talking.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we're keeping this consistent with
okay.
what was heard in the rebuttal. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. This is from transcript, and it's from the transcript case number 10778, March 21st, 2011. Brock Riffle provided nearly identical testimony again in the present case, stating that there are multiple existing cell tower locations available to AT&T within a two-mile radius of the proposed site. Even AT&T's application plainly shows and admits three existing towers and the South Bethany Water Tower, four structures within the two-mile radius. And that even is shown as Andrew Erbu, E-R-B-E-A-U's letter to Pam Scott dated July 28, 2009. As such, AT&T admits it cannot satisfy the requirements of the code 115-194.2 regarding that there is no existing co-location site within a two-mile radius, and as such, its application is admittedly fatal. Thirdly, the applicant is operating a cellular antenna installation on a utility pole in close proximity to the proposed site, but purposely didn't indicate that it was theirs. It's uncontested that utility poles provide suitable alternative structure for co-location of cellular antennas and are mandated under federal law to be made available by the utilities to cellular providers, including the applicant, and they run continuously directly through the heart of the alleged gap region and beyond making the assertion of need for the proposed tower at the proposed location or the inability to co-locate anywhere within the two-mile radius. AT&T was proved with photographic evidence to be operating a utility tower 0.38 tenths of a mile from the proposed site. It was marked AT&T Mobility. However, over a week before the current application, it was removed. Now, AT&T says it was removed. I don't understand why they would go check another tower for quality assurance or what, but that sticker was removed and nothing else was placed there, and we really don't see a sticker on the temporary tower. In fact, in 2001, in case number 10778, Dr. Raines identified that singular, also known as AT&T, was at the top of that utility pole, and AT&T did not assert or prove otherwise. And that was case number 10778, transcript pages 110, 111. Regardless who owns the pole, utility poles run pervasively both on the first streets to the east and the west of the proposed site and for miles north and south. For argument's sake, even if they didn't operate the antennas on that particular pole, they could operate an antenna on any pole all the way up the street and through the heart of Bethany Beach where the purported gap exists. As such, the applicant has almost limitless number of tall utility mounts running along the proposed site, as well as through the alleged gap area. Federal law requires that these poles be made available, and such a mounting does not require a special use exception as it would be on an existing structure. In light of the current operating and or readily available to operate one or more utility mounts installation in its ideal location, any assertion of need for the proposed tower at the location lacks credibility. Fourth, the applicant has failed to meet, nor could it meet, based on the fact that its burden of proving that the approval of a special use exception will not substantially affect adversely use of neighboring and adjacent properties. Even though it was unnecessary to do so, since the applicant fell short of its burden, residents presented irrefutable evidence that use of their land has already been and will be substantially adversely affected if this application is approved. The applicant failed to present reliable, persuasive, or truthful evidence proving that the exception would not substantially affect adversely use of neighboring adjacent property. Even when the board invited the applicant's attorney to do so with a direct question, he had no answer to the question, how will granting of the special use exception not substantially affect adversely use of neighboring and adjacent property? In contrast, residents presented significant and reliable evidence of substantial adverse effects caused by the illegal temporary tower still standing, and of the substantial adverse effects that will occur if the special use exception is granted. People use their property, particularly oceanside property and resort property, in a variety of ways. This type of property is used as an investment, as a source of rental income, for vacationing, enjoyment, relaxing, setting, views, escape, and residence. And we do enjoy the smells of the crabs. The residents, through detailed testimony of appraisers and realtors extensively familiar with Bethany Beach area and homes at issue, proved substantially adverse effects in the form of depreciation in value, 10 to 30%. And these were actual figures by realtors in this area. They actually work in Bethany Beach totally. And this is as a result of the temporary tower, something that will be only exacerbated by the taller, larger proposed tower with multiple arrays, carriers, equipments, and sheds. Anyone purchasing a home knows that a noticeable reduction in property value is a substantial adverse effect. Likewise, as Realtor Cox explained, if the proposed tower is built, Sea Pines listing realtors will be under a duty to identify the existence of adjacent cell tower under Delaware law on the requisite disclosure form, something recognized in the industry as a red flag or kiss of death. something that scares away buyers and drives down sales prices. In contrast, the applicant's non-local appraisers, who were not from or closely familiar with Bethany Beach or the surrounding area, testified generally to a blanket ambiguous statement that the prices in Bethany are like anywhere else in the shore area. Additionally, applicants tried to tout a stat about prices of certain Sea Pines Village units, along with certain Sea Colony units being the top price two condos around the surrounding areas. This will necessarily be the case as Sea Colony and Sea Pines are of the few communities with condos, much less two-bedroom condos, which surround the Bethany area. When there are no other properties for a listing, of course, the properties that can qualify as two bedrooms for the list of highest anything. They are the only ones that can qualify for the list based on the criteria, two bedrooms near Bethany. As such, this purported stat, like most of the applicant's appraisal testimony, is merely manipulated figures and red herrings to make an argument that contradicts logic. Rental ability. Rental ability and rental value was also proved to likely be harmed in a significant way. Mr. Cox explained how he hasn't had a single repeat renter since the temporary tower has been in place. A lack of repeats is really extremely unusual for a resort area near the ocean and will result in an inability to rent the property or a significant reduction in rental rates that can be charged. It seems quite certain that Sea Pines Village units wrote letters intending their intention not to come back to Sea Pines if the proposed cell tower is approved in construction. Likewise, Mr. Crowley, a prevalent rental manager in the Bethany area, indicated the substantial adverse effects approval of the proposed special use exception would have on rentals in Sea Pines Village and to him. Likewise, evidence was proved that homes deemed in or near the fall zone of cell towers are not eligible for FHA loans. As such, the buyer's market for unit in Sea Pines Village closest to the proposed site will not be an option for potential buyers. Lastly, but certainly not in the least importance, it was demonstrated how proposed special use exception at the proposed site is significantly unreasonable and increases safety risks, many of the risks for which the applicants have not accounted for, nor do they know how to account for. The numerous hazards, the risk of catastrophic injury introduced by a placement of a 100-foot monopole on multiple sheds with electronics and chemicals over a pond. Additionally, Mr. Calabretta said that they would be putting the tower basically in the water. Additionally, placement of the tower and its supports structure in the water full-time would result in increased risk of failure as standing water, including salt blowing in off the ocean, is known to exacerbate decay of structural and footer supports due to corrosion from water, salt, and rust. Mr. Gary Bogosian, an architect licensed in Delaware, raised real concerns about whether such a structure could be properly constructed to maintain its integrity in light of its location and positioning in the retention pond. In fact, Mr. Calabretta, AT&T's consultant to the preparer of the site plan, stated in testimony in case number 10778 that in that plan where the monopole was not supposed to be in the water as it is here, in situations like this, where the actual water isn't in contact with the structure itself, there wouldn't be any special requirements. That's transcript 10778, page 49. Well, here AT&T admits that the monopole will, in fact, be in the water, but they've not accounted for that precarious situation, as Mr. Calabretta admitted in 2011, would need special requirements. Likewise, Mr. Calabretta later in the testimony, in case 10491, states that exposure to water for several days at a time would not be problematic, suggesting lengthy exposure to water and certainly continuing not abating exposure to water would be problematic. So that's from transcript case 10778, page 51.
Ms. Girk, was there testimony about it being in the stormwater management pond this evening?
That it would be in the water. Mm-hmm. That the footing would be in the water.
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear that tonight.
It's going to be off.
It's moved now from the water to off the water again?
Not in the water at all.
Not in the water at all. I was asking about his
foundation,
right.
I asked him where they're going to place it, farther away from the pond or right in the same, area, but down a little bit farther, not in the water.
But the site plan showed it in the water.
Ours didn't.
So just a...
Can he...
Has you been sworn in?
Yeah, Mr. Hafferly has been sworn in. Mr. Hafferly, yeah. Did I get it right?
Yes, Hafferly. In the submission that AT&T presented, they brought plans, right? We'll have a copy of the plan. Okay. This tower is now approximately 15 feet in from where the other one is. I don't have a scale over here. The one that's there right now, the temporary tower, is right on the edge. This is about 15 feet in, so it's in the retention pond.
I asked him that question earlier.
Yes.
So I went down and looked at that, and it's about 15, 20 feet away from the pond. They said they weren't going in the pond, they were going down farther. That's what he said.
Well, this is their, these are the drawings that they submitted.
No, I mean, what are we looking at down there? It's up there too.
This is the plot that was submitted with the application.
We don't have nothing in front of us to look at. It'd be nice if we had that.
This is the one with the application.
Okay.
Y'all should have gotten it with the...
This over here...
I didn't know I was going to need it to bring it.
This over here is your pond.
We asked him that.
This is the pond right over here. This is the
The other one's not in the water.
So from here to there, you're inside the...
Well, we can... The board would like, we can clarify that with the applicant's engineer.
Okay, well, we're done. I'll ask that a question again.
All right.
Go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Under the assumption that it's in the water, that's what it was on. So the applicant is required to prepare a stormwater management plan to retain the current volume of water handled, but the pond size will decrease due to the additional structure. As such, a new plan is required and verified by DENRIC as to the actual workability. While the applicant during the hearing suggested no difficult work was needed, this counter to DENREC's position, as it's illogical in light of the applicant's lack of approval and failure to obtain approval prior to the hearing, if such approval was something requiring no effort. In fact, in conversations with DENRIC, it was clear that the applicant, as DENRIC stated, they have no clue how to achieve the necessary stormwater management requirement on that site given what they are proposing. Such stormwater management plans developments can open a Pandora's box of issues for which a solution does not exist. As such, the board could not find the applicant met its burden regarding proof of no substantial effect to absence of DENREC approval, as the application is currently noncompliant with no guarantee of compliance.
Excuse me, Mrs. Girk.
Yes.
Has DENREC testified here?
I didn't go there personally, but members of our team.
No, but has DENREC testified here?
To me, no.
No, has DENREC testified here
to
at
me.
This board?
In this hearing.
In this hearing?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. All right. For all this is my last point. The applicant has failed to provide any evidence why mere modification of an antenna positioning system characteristic, such as increase in power or other system modification, will not solve its purported need. For another reason, the applicant has failed to satisfy the burden of demonstrating its need for the proposed tower. The applicant just says that they have a gap in coverage and want to remedy it. However, it's not provided evidence of its efforts. It's made to address this purported problem with modifications of its own infrastructure. It merely used a computer model to find a new tower location, but did not do any real data or experimentation. For example, the antennas, they can be rotated or raised or on existing structures. One simple example is moving the antenna up several feet on the structure. They've already housed the existing structure, perhaps building an extension if needed. Two Delaware Superior Court cases from Newcastle County, Preston versus Newcastle Board of Adjustment, 202-WL-122-884, and Beatty versus Newcastle County, 200-WL-97260, give examples of situations where cell providers move their existing antennas merely higher vertically, even if the elevation of the antennas required further county approval through a variance or special use exception in the building of a new tower. AT&T was in fact the provider in the first case as such. It clearly knows this is an option but chose not to investigate this option. As demonstrated above, during the hearing on November 18th and in the submission associated with the case, the applicant has unequivocally and clearly not met its burden in showing that existing structures within a two-mile radius of the proposed location are not available for co-location, substantiating the need for the tower at the proposed location, and proving that the proposed cellular tower and associated infrastructure will not substantially affect adversely the use of adjacent and neighboring property. We hope that you consider this evidence, and we hope that you reject this application. One other thing I did want to say about that Mr. Forson brought up that I meant to say earlier is that the data from the tower at the PEPUP site is actually, it's an illegal tower, so data shouldn't even be considered. But this tower is... it's called a COW, communication on wheels. It's the same size as a utility pole. So if, in fact, that these transmitters and receptors could be placed on the highway, you know, just even in front, that would be, you know, that would be credible. The carrier can direct the signal to any, at any time, and thus, you know, they can direct their signal to any tower to gather data. So... getting data to one place and having a lot of data on the 4th of July is a pretty simple thing. And data is gathered, it's a simple math thing. The data is not based on one day, it's based all year long, so then you divide by 365 and find it out. So anyway, thank you so much for your time.
Ma'am, I got a question to ask you. But the water tower, mm-hmm. I think he brought it up that they cannot use that water tower. But you said it's available?
They're on it. They're on Sussex Shore. They are on Sussex Shore. They have equipment on Sussex Shore.
You're thinking about the city.
Yeah, city water tower.
Oh, no, not Bethany Beach. There's Sussex Shore down Highway 1. If in the middle of town, it's 1.57-tenths of a mile to Sussex Shore, and they are on Sussex Shore right now. So they're within the two-mile area from Sussex Shore to the downtown Bethany Beach.
I got you.
All right.
Sorry.
Anything else?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Ron Girk. I'm going to just touch on a couple points from notes tonight. Well, first of all, I would like to mention exhibit number 8 that we provided at the first hearing a couple of weeks back. And this is from Gary Bogosian. He's a certified architect in Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey. And he has authorized me to read this, but it's also in the court record. But anyhow, he is talking about construction should not occur in an active retention pond. And if you look at the site map that they submitted, you'll see that the retention pond is a little outline around the outsides of the rim, and they're going to be about 15 feet in sight, as my wife just mentioned. The other interesting thing is about that is, as we talked about in the last hearing, that... DENREC now uses a 100-year standard. When it was initially put in and initially set up, the property there at PEPUP was under a 10-year standard of where the pond fills up and the flooding. Now they do a 100-year standard. We submitted pictures also last time of an overhaul shot from 2009 of the water pond. At that time in 2009, because it was initially put up in 1994, in 2009, the pond was already at a standing level, was already at the 10-year full level. The pond, we bought the property in 2004. The pond has always been this far away from the parking lot. And when it floods all the way to the back of Pepper's building on occasion, okay? So just so you know that, because what Mr. Calabretta's been telling us all night is that it's not now suddenly after last hearing, it's not going to be in the water, which it is going to be in the water. So anyhow, the architect says, incredibly, the applicant proposes to construct the cell tower and the equipment building in an active retention pond that often floods. This is a dangerous location, as subsoil conditions and watery environment can make any type of footings unstable. Bolts, anchors, and supports for the tower equipment building and wire bridge would also be subject to substantial water exposure on a regular basis, leaving them prone to accelerated deterioration. The area of the pond, which is full most of the time, and this gentleman owns unit number 23, I believe it is, so he knows because he's there all the time too, would be harmfully diminished, an unacceptable condition leading to local flooding. Any leaks in the batteries or other hazardous materials would cause an environmental disaster entering the groundwater and our well system. And again, they're proposing that the building be over the water with poles inside the water.
Mr. Girk, is this already in the record?
This is in the record.
Okay. Can we
exhibit number 8?
That's fine. Can we tailor it to new comments or testimony? That's already the board has that.
Okay.
For them, and
it's pertinent to what he said tonight about the pond.
Understood. So. We're trying to avoid having anything that is
okay.
Redundant testimony or evidence, so that we can move this along.
All right.
Thank you.
You mentioned did Denrec make any presentation? We do have an exhibit number 6. A letter from Denrec is in the records, just so you know about that, because there is no application. I mentioned a 10-year versus the 100-year flood. That's a new category that pond would have to be under. Mr. Calabretta, he said that the tower would be built to code. There is no code for building a monopole single tower inside of water. There is no code that exists for that. He also said that it's built for the standard of 120 miles an hour. The wind in the last storm that was done out in the east that we just saw in the news the last 2 weeks was 235 miles an hour when there was a tropical storm there. We're one block off the ocean. We've had trees on the south end of our pond get all blown over and uprooted. If anybody went by our property, you see all those trees on the south end of the pond of our pool is all wired up because the wind blew everything down, tore the fence down and everything. That's what we would be faced with, having the cell tower there, okay? And they don't have Denrec clearance, and they haven't applied for Denrec. Mr. Calabretta says that it would be 800 cubic foot needed, and probably only 100 cubic foot needed of displacement. How does he know? They haven't done a soil testing. They don't even know. Nobody ever does it, so there's no code. So how does he know it's going to be 100 foot? What if he keeps digging and he has to go 45 feet, and he has to go 8 foot round? How much displacement is that? And also Denrec, for every 1 cubic foot of water that you displace, you have to show them where you're going to replace 1.5 times that somewhere else. So if they take the water from the back of Mr. Pepper's property, are they going to put it under the Arby's tables in the front of the building? What are they going to do with that if they displace it? And he can't tell you how much he's going to displace it because he doesn't know. Not only that, but he may not get approval from Denrec. They haven't put the plan in. It's a big, expensive multi mathematical example to go together, and they haven't put it together. But if they get the rights to do it, they're going to do it right, and they'll be okay. They'll put it in. Well, that's not going to happen. The other thing is Mr. Calabretta says that they only have one shed. That is not true. Every single multi-unit monopole in Virginia, Delaware, and Maryland, you drive. I've done it for 4 years. I have pictures of all of those. They have one shack for each one. The Sussex Shores water tower is Verizon and AT&T. Verizon has a shack. They have a shack like they're talking about, and AT&T is off to the right side in a fenced-in area with their power units and their standing units. That's another fact. They say they can't have a power unit unless they have a big shack. They have them there. They have them in other places. So that's not a correct fact either. So, you know, there's just all these facts. I mean, you wonder if you're talking about the same kind of place. When we were here, the board asked, Mr. Workman asked Mr. Calabretta, well, how deep are you going to go in with the footing? He said 2 or 3 feet. And then as he got pressed And he said, but then Mr. Rickard told him, what about the wind, like the wind towers? And he said, oh, yeah, well, we could dig deeper. We'll go deeper. We'll go bigger. They don't have a clue. They're not going to do that. They're going to do whatever suits them. They're going to have a crew go out there and dig a hole, and they're going to put it what fits. You have to have an engineering mathematical system done properly. They're not going to do that. They proved it with the illegal tower they have up there now. The illegal tower that's up there now is one strand of their little pillars up there. They have a little temporary little unit that has three wires going in, three wires going out, and one little box for electricity. That's exactly what they could do on any of the existing poles that are on Pennsylvania Avenue down there, or on Route 1. The poles on Route 1 are at least 60 feet tall, and they could put another extension on them. They say, the gentleman here said that the poles are 20 foot tall. There's one little section, two blocks long in the south end of Bethany, that has small little wooden towers. But if you go 1.5 blocks over to the other side, there are 60-foot metal towers all the way down to their Sussex Shore water bottle. So, I mean, it's just incredible, the kind of chameleon things that come out of these people, I'm telling you. All right, there's a couple more and I'm done, I promise. They talked about Mr. Rain showed a lack of data. He showed that their coverage area that they showed in their application is wrong. They did it from Pepper. They're not complaining about Pepper. They're complaining about downtown Bethany. The Sussex Shores is 1.5 miles away. The tower that's at Long and Foster that they claim is T-Mobile, but had their sticker on it, and they didn't complain when we said it was a singular, a.k.a. One of the last court case. They didn't complain about that, but that's less than a half a mile away. So anyhow, they didn't mention that about Mr. Raines' testimony. They say that 911 coverage, that if somebody makes a call to 911 on an AT&T phone and it can't go through the Verizon thing, are you kidding me? You the only people you ever call on a cell phone is the same processor as you. I call friends that have T-Mobile, and I got Verizon. I got rid of AT&T 4 years ago. But you call these people up on the phone, they answer the phone. How does it get routed? You mean to tell me he's going to share the big shed on the bottom? How's he going to get that all routed if he's not going to share the shed on the bottom of this thing like he said he's going to do? There's too many blacks and whites that don't match up over here. Let's see here. Building heights in Bethany Beach, I think, are mandated at like 35 feet. They can only be so far above sea level. They have a big fight. You guys all know about the councils fighting that right now. It's very minimal. There's no clutter. Mr. Rain showed that there's no clutter. The Verizon and AT&T Sussex Shore water bottle, you can see it from the downtown Bethany straight up north on 1. You can see it clear as a bell. And have they sent out their troubleshooting people? They sent them out in Pennsylvania, but they didn't send them out in Delaware to really get a mathematical model for us. Okay? The new 100-foot cell tower that they're proposing will have four rings on it. Any real estate comparison that they make now is day and night. You're talking about a little baby miniature compared to this big thing. And Mr. Calabretta says, oh, it's not going to be like that. It is going to be like that. I will admit it looks a little bit wide on that particular one picture, but the second picture is better. That picture is taken from Route 26 by Hawkers. That has four units on it. That's exactly what there is all over all the states here whenever there's multiple units. There's two big buildings underneath it, and then there's all kinds of wires. And you have a picture in our book of all the wires coming out. It's not nice and neat like it's on their planogram. They're only showing one carrier on that. They don't even show you the diagram of all four. Where are all the wires for all the four on the planogram? It's not in there. Complaints. They talked about complaints. We never see the data on the complaints. What complaint? Who made it? Where were they, in a building? There's always problems with cell phones in a building. How many did they get? They complained that they had 59 online sites that complained about renting at Sea Pines Village. When? How long? For last 5 years? Last 2 months since the cell tower was in? I mean, okay, one more. If the 80-foot temporary pole is working, thank you, Mr. Rickard, for asking that question, and they couldn't answer you, could they? If the 80-foot temporary pole is working and they're getting all their data. That's what they do. They're in a data business. You know, it should work. Then why do they need a 100-foot pole? Oh, well, they're going to make money because they're going to rent it because Mr. Pepper doesn't want to give up the contract. Okay? So that's proof that it could work on a utility pole. So, again, all current comparisons with the illegal tower that's up now should not be allowed because it's not the same tower that's going to go in, and we will definitely substantially be harmed adversely, and we're allowed to say that because we live there and I see it. Every day when I turn down my driveway to go into my home, I see that tower sitting there at the end of the fence. And you had Mr. Miller here last time. He lives on number 9. He lives right at the end. He told you about what he sees from his deck every night. And it's a sin what these people are trying to put us through just to make a couple extra bucks for a cell tower. They could do it somewhere else, and they should do it somewhere else. Thank you for your time. I'm sorry you have to be away from your family so long.
That's okay. Okay, who's next?
I'll go quickly.
That's okay.
I didn't plan to speak tonight, so I don't have any prepared notes. I'm Greg Cox.
Thank you. Sorry. Just make sure we had it on the record.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No prepared notes, but I am a realtor in the area. I have been for 8 years, and prior to that, I was in food sales and marketing in Baltimore, Washington. The last 10 years before becoming a realtor, I was president of one of the largest food and sales and marketing companies in the Baltimore, Washington area, and I made my living analyzing data. I mean, they've been speaking all night about data, and one of the things that I learned very early on is that when you're tasked with proving a point, you can analyze data any which way you want, and I was trained in my business to be able to argue both sides of any debate. And I was charged with organizing my data to do that. And I think that's exactly what AT&T has done here tonight. Having said that, and in contrast to that, 3 weeks ago or whatever it was that we were here, I submitted to you gentlemen some data referencing Sea Pines Village specifically. And it was the only data that was presented that was specifically Sea Pines Village. And I don't have it with me, but what it basically showed you was that when Sea Pines Village back in, I took everything that sold Sea Pines Village 10 or 12 years back prior to the cell tower, showed you how units on Laguna Drive, which is the one that's most impacted by that cell tower.
Mr. Cox, we've already tried not to rehash things. We do have that in the record. I believe we have your testimony in the record.
But I think it was relevant based on what they were presenting tonight is that I specifically showed how that disparity on those prices after that cell tower became like this. And the only thing different was the cell tower. The parking lot was there. Arby's was there. Everything was there when the prices were like this. And then they went like that. And the other thing that I thought was somewhat suspicious is when they presented about the 6 units or 6 out of 10 units that were sold, 2-bedroom units, not water view, east of the Route 1, 6 of 10 or something like that was Sea Pines Village units, highest priced. Well, I thought that was pretty strange. So I went back and I checked into our MLS system, which most of the sales are reported to MLS. And I put in those parameters. And lo and behold, what came up, and what they said was true. But what they didn't tell you is that you could say that they were also the lowest priced units because they were the only units. There are only Sea Pines and 1 or 2 other remote condominium properties that are 2-bedroom units east of Route 1 that have sold in the last 2 years. North Bethany, Bethany, South Bethany, I think 11 properties came up. Only 2 non-Sea Pines units came up that sold that met that criteria. So that statistic was just totally, blatantly false by omission. Okay. And the last point I want to make is that when I was here the last time, and nobody brought this up either with, you know, with all of the expert testimony from the appraisers. Appraisers don't show property. Realtors show property. And I stood up here, and another very prominent realtor in Bethany Beach stood up here.
If they haven't presented it in their rebuttal, it's not proper for sir rebuttal.
Okay.
So I know you made some presentations last time, so we're trying to focus this solely on what they focused on their rebuttal. So
well,
if
they
you've
had
got
a chance to prepare their rebuttal based on what we said, and it just seems important. But that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. who's next?
Mr. Hefferly?
Yes.
It's John, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Sure, we have it for the record.
I've been sitting there listening to the testimony, and it just reminds me of fog and mirrors to justify something. AT&T stated that they received a whole bunch of complaints which would justify their need for a tower. Okay. They didn't mention what time period. Was that 1 month? Was that 1 year? Was that 5 years? I don't know. Were the complaints investigated to determine why people called? Did they call because there was a lack of equipment failure, or there was equipment failure or something? I don't know. Did they complain during a period of high usage, like 4th of July? Or how about during a storm when service gets knocked out? Where were these calls located in the gap, supposedly gap that they have? Were they concentrated in one little corner, or were they spread out all over the place? I don't know. It's fog and mirrors. AT&T made a big issue about 4th of July. Wow, we had all these calls coming in and people couldn't make calls. What do you think happened down in Ocean City? How about Dewey? How about Rehoboth? Up in Dover, you know when they have the races? They bring in these mobile communication units. And they set them all around to take care of the crowds on that weekend. Matter of fact, up at Dover this year, they had a half a dozen of them to take care of it. To use the 4th of July as an example of a problem at the Bethany area is crazy. In their submission, they submitted these drawings, and everyone's got a copy of it. And they don't say that they're inside the retention pond. You take a look at this drawing right over here, and it's obvious that they're maybe about 15 feet in. I couldn't get the scale on this, but it's definitely inside a retention pond. And that retention pond, I've been living in the Bethany area, an owner there for about 25 years. And the last 10 years, that pond has been full of water all the time. The AT&T has not met the section of the code that requires proof of a lack of existing structures. I question the validity of using four-year-old data to justify anything. Are we supposed to accept the notion that time has stood still and nothing has changed in 4 years? In 4 years, owners have changed. Economic conditions have changed. Attitudes have changed. And governing boards have changed. Governing boards like Sea Colony have changed. This makes using four-year-old data to represent present-day conditions inaccurate, outdated, and unacceptable as proof that there is a lack of existing structures. Additionally, there are numerous utility poles in the area that were not even considered as sites of co-location. AT&T also mentioned that to meet their obligations as a FCC licensee in the Bethlehem area, that that they must provide reliable service. Now, they've been at this for 9 years, I think AT&T had mentioned, and you would think in 9 years that they would be able to come up with the relevant standard that they're supposed to meet. They haven't identified the standard. They haven't submitted data showing how they are not meeting this standard, which would require them to put a tower at this location. Without defining the standard, there is no way of determining the validity of AT&T's claim that a tower is needed. You have to know what they're trying to meet. They talk about gap in service. What does gap mean? It's soft and fuzzy. I don't know. I'm an engineer. And in any type of engineering work, you have to rely on numbers. If you can't measure it, you can't control it. So what I'm saying is, define a gap. What does that mean? Define reliable service. Define reliable coverage. They can't. They haven't. To measure a definition of reliability is you have to put it in terms of probability. Something to the effect, hey, there's an 80% probability that the call will go through. That to me is reliable. Or 90%, whatever the number is. But they've got to define that. What does reliable mean as far as the gap and service? The other thing that the code requires is that they have to accommodate two additional carriers. I don't question that a tower will be physically able, that there will be. I do not question the ability of the cell tower to physically hold three or four carriers, but I do question the ability of the location to accommodate the enlarged footprint required to house the auxiliary equipment. AT&T said that they went over to Sussex Shores, or no, South Bethany, and they said, that's a good tower over there. We'd love to go on there, but we don't have room. They said they don't have room to put the equipment down there. So how can we say that there's enough room at the location that they're providing, or that they want to put the tower up right now? Here's this diagram, and it has a proposed AT&T equipment compound. That's for one. Now, I'm assuming that if there's two or three other carriers, that you're going to have one, two, three. I don't know where they're going to put it. You've got fire lanes. You've got parking spaces over here, which I'm sure were all required when you originally approved the Arby's and stuff like that. And then you have the retention pond. Denerec has to approve anything you're doing to the pond. I also question using data that AT&T is generating from an illegal tower. On 1/31/2011, a violation notice was issued by Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission requiring the removal of a temporary tower. It was to be completed by March 1st, 2011. Since AT&T has not removed the tower and ignored this order, I question the legality of AT&T using data generated from the operation of the illegal tower to support their position that a cell tower is needed at the location. AT&T has failed to quantify the effect of the illegal tower on the data they presented, and as such, I don't think we can use that data. A believe Mr. Rickard, you asked about Sandy, about the storm that we had. We had a storm, but it wasn't bad. I went down there the day after, and the beaches looked untouched, like it was a regular storm. We were fortunate that we didn't get, I don't know what the wind speed was, but we had no damage at Sea Pines, and as I said, I went down to the beaches, and the beaches looked fine. So that's really not representative of what a real storm would be. And another question that you had was on vibration, and that's a very real question. I was down there during another storm with the temporary tower, watching that thing wave up there, and that's at 80 feet. Now, at 100 feet, it's going to be a lot more, and that's going to translate all the way down into the foundation. And again, as they said, the foundation hasn't been designed yet. It might be 10 feet deep. It might be 100 feet deep. They haven't designed it yet. And with the water table, I think we're only about 3 or 4 inches above sea level there. Or maybe it's a foot. We're pretty close. I don't know what they're going to find, and they don't know either what they're going to find until they do some drillings. So I question. That's a major problem. That's about all I have. Anyone have any questions?
I got one question. So
sure.
How many people stay there?
It's
all rental.
Yes. There's maybe 3 people who live there full time.
Full time, and rest of it's rental, and you come in like a couple weeks or something like that at the end of summer, something like that.
Yep.
But most of it is always rented out.
Yes.
And you have any trouble renting yours out?
I stopped advertising about 10 years ago because I have all repeat customers.
Right
people
now.
People come there and they like it.
Right now?
Yes.
So the tower's gonna affect you a bit?
I'm not across from the tower. I'm unit number 35. So it has an effect, but it doesn't have as big an effect as it would have on the towers, on the units right around there.
You can still see the tower, though?
From my backyard, yes.
Yes.
Not sitting on my patio. I have to walk over and walk toward the pool and stuff like that.
Do your renters use the pool?
Yes.
Where the tower can be seen?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And as I said, they've been there for 10 years already. They're like family.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
I believe there's one more. Cynthia, I didn't catch your last. Come on. If you can just state your name for the record.
My name is Kathy Vengazzo. I do not live at Sea Pines Village. I live in Ocean View. I live about a mile inland from where they live. I am a coordinator of a group of a consortium of homeowners associations. We have about 30 homeowner groups in our consortium, and we represent over 1,500, I believe, at last count, homeowners. And we became aware of this issue after we met with them. And I've personally gone and walked the land there. And I think if you all had an opportunity to do that before you voted, it might be a very significant. It's a very limited piece of ground. And one thing I haven't heard mentioned tonight is that there's a sign there that says that 32,000 gallons of fuel is stored underground. It's a gas station there.
Ma'am, 32,000 gallons of fuel was not brought up this evening. We're sticking to the rebuttal, please.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if it was brought up. I wasn't here on the November 18th one. But I thought that was significant in that, as Mrs. Girk mentioned, the salt air and the deterioration that comes with that, it's very damaging. And the electrical work there, I don't know, it looks like a perfect storm for me. I have submitted written comments earlier. Because I was wondering if the fire marshal has been asked for an opinion about this at all. I would think that would be very valuable input.
Do you have anything
yes,
regarding
I do.
The
yes,
rebuttal?
Yes, I do.
Please go to it because the hour's late. We're tired.
I am too.
Okay.
The issue of rentals and one owner being able to have full rentals but no repeat rentals came up tonight. I'd like to rebut that. I owned a rental unit in the area, not at Sea Pines Village, but as a homeowner, It's your repeat rentals that are your bread and butter. If you keep having transient renters come in, you have a variety of experiences, people who take good care of your property and people who abuse your property. What you want are these repeat renters who you know you can count on, that they will come in every year, they'll take good care of your property. So this homeowner who was cited as having full rentals, that's a false statistic, because somebody looks it up in a brochure and sees that it's a half a block to walk to the ocean, and they rent it, but then something makes them not come back. And my opinion is that somebody who's saying, why didn't you come back, and they mention the gas station there, they're mentioning the totality of a gas station that includes an Arby's, a gas station, there's a propane tank there, there's a cell tower there. They aren't necessarily going to pick out one individual thing. I'd like to mention, too, about the Sandy. The storm has been brought up tonight to reinforce what the previous speaker said. I was there during Sandy. I was in my home the entire time. It was forecast that Sandy was going to make a direct hit at Bethany Beach, and we lucked out. It hit New Jersey instead. We had a lot of rain. We had wind, significant wind, but we didn't have wind like they experienced north of us. I would wonder what the impact of what New Jersey felt would be on a 100-foot cell tower on a sand foundation like this one's going to be. It was also mentioned that Verizon, it would be interested in going to this new tower if it's built. I have had Verizon for 10 years. I've lived here permanently for 7. I've never had a gap in Verizon service. We used to have it when we went inland, like in Dagsboro and Millsboro, but we never had it here. So why Verizon needs to piggyback with AT&T, I don't know. I think AT&T is probably interested because it's going to save their money they're paying Mr. Pepper. One other thing that I think, you know, the other speakers have mentioned too, there's so much area on Route 1 within 2 miles of this site where a cell tower could be more reasonably located and not have a significant hardship and impact on people's residences. Nobody wants it in their backyard. I understand that. I wouldn't want it in my backyard either. But when you're driving down Route 1 and there's a whole strip of commercial enterprises there, you know, the Pizza, the Grotto, the Long and Foster, all the real estate companies, that seems to be a perfect place, you know, other than a gas station by a whole bunch of houses. Because if anything ever happened that cell tower did fall, that would be a major conflagration. I mean, there's no question about it at that location. The other point that I'd like to raise is, as the previous speaker said, AT&T defied the orders of this county and the courts for over 2 years in not taking the cell tower down when it was ruled illegal. I think an adverse inference should be drawn on them for that. I don't think we want to do business with somebody who won't respect the rules that you all set up in this county for us to all abide by. And, you know, they're a big conglomerate. You see David and Goliath here tonight. We're all a bunch of homeowners. They've imported 6 experts from Salisbury, from Pennsylvania, from all over the country. It just seems to me that some consequence should accrue to them for the fact that they defied the laws and the goodwill and good faith of this community. And I don't think they should be rewarded by getting another chance to do it all over again. Mrs. Gurk asked me to make one point also for her. She'll come up and do it herself. You said at the beginning of this proceeding that documents that were submitted by them that included a CD would not be accepted for the record. Yet things that AT&T presented to you tonight, you did accept.
What I said was that anything that had been submitted prior to would not be admitted into the record prior to. If there are things that are to be submitted as part of the rebuttal or the surrebuttal, that is, and it's evidence or testimony.
Okay, so you are accepting that now as part of their testimony?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We misunderstood that.
Well, no. I mean, if it's got to be submitted as part of it.
Well, then she wants to submit.
She wishes to submit it, then, you know, she may submit it to Mr. Lank. It has to be reflective of the rebuttal.
Okay, well, that was part of it. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Yes, ma'am. Maybe now, is that everyone? Did I miss anyone? Okay. Now, there's no more from him either now, right?
Pardon? I don't believe so, unless you wanted to get clarity on the any issue, if you had any questions.
You got an issue?
Yeah, I got two.
I mean, at this point, it's the board if you have questions, I think.
Yeah, I got.
You got a question, then?
Yep.
Okay.
I had a couple of them.
Thank you.
And I think I asked you.
Mr. Workman.
But the tower, just moving it down, it's not in the pond at all.
The tower will not be in the pond. The pond itself is unaffected. It will be at the edge of the pond. It'll be bermed up, and the edge of the pond will be realigned, but it's not in the pond. There's a wet pond. It's not going to be in water, and Mr. Calabretta testified that, and indeed, the letter you have from Sussex County Conservation clearly states we can't affect the capacity of the pond. So we may have to reconfigure the pond a little bit, but it will not be. I mean, the storage capacity won't be adversely affected. In fact, as I said, one of the things that we're going to look at, if you grant us the a lot of the stuff they
did. You did state that, though, that you would have to use some of that pond. If you did, you'd have to reconstruct it at the last hearing. And that was the question that was asked to you. No, you are going into it. You're going to have to reconstruct, correct?
Correct.
That was a question. Correct. So yes or no. Are you going to have to or not?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to ask you, sir. I've been trying to ask you that all night long.
Well, I'm sorry if I didn't quite understand your problem. And I will tell you, speaking with Mr. Calabretta,
so
there's two components to the pond. There's the wet portion. That's unaffected. Then there's a little bit that's dry. We're going to part of the base will go into that, so it'll be bermed up, and the pond will be reconfigured so that at the end of the day, it won't be in the pond. The pond will be reconfigured slightly.
Denrec's doing that for you, though.
Beg your pardon?
Denrec's doing
that for you?
No. We do it. This is a stormwater management pond that was created with the original plan. So you have the right to modify a stormwater management pond. You just have to get approval for it from county. And, you know, a lot of the, as I said in my closing remarks, you can't satisfy your critics. I mean, they chastise us for not having all these approvals already, but we don't get those approvals until we get a special exception.
Well, sure, I don't think they were critics. I don't think that was really fair. I think he was asking a question. I've heard you say that all night long. They're all critics. I don't think nobody here is a critic. I'm not.
I don't mean you, gentlemen.
Let me finish and I'll let you serve. But I don't think they were critics. They just had asked that question, and I'd asked that earlier too. And nobody, you know, you said you weren't, but in your November the 16th meeting we had, you did, in fact, make that statement, or you did ask when they made that statement. You would have to be into it some, but you would correct it.
Yes.
Is that correct? That was asked.
That is absolutely correct.
I don't think that's being a critic, that they asked that question.
No, I agree. I'm not saying they're critics for asking that question, but throughout their remarks, they said, oh, we haven't gotten this plan, or oh, we haven't done this yet, or oh, we haven't done that yet, and we need to do all this. Well, we will, but only if we get a special exception.
Bottom line, when the tower is completed, there will not be any part of the tower in the pond?
Correct.
Thanks.
One more question. They brought it up. Other Verizon put that on that tower. Well, they had to put another generator beside that too? Another power unit and another building?
My understanding is, they would need their equipment and the generator at the base of the tower, just like AT&T has, yes.
Well, where in the world are they going to put that? If you got three other ones, and you got three other ones going to have another generator, and another building. That's four buildings you're going to have there, right?
No, only three.
Three buildings. Where are you going to put three buildings at?
Well, I mean, they're essentially the size of a parking space. I mean, they're not that big, and so there's room back there if you walk it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that until they brought that up. I mean, I got to look at it.
Okay.
All right. Well, I mean, but there's room for it.
There is going to be buildings.
Well, assuming you get two other carriers that want to go on there, I mean, we've now heard, and as I said, it's no surprise that Verizon would want to go there, and you'd put down another storage shed, and it's enclosed, and just like the one for AT&T will be.
Okay.
But there's room.
Have any more questions?
Okay. Do you have any more questions? Milton. No more questions.
No questions. Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you for your time
again.
And patience.
Okay, gentlemen.
Mr. Lane, did Ms. Girk get you her submission?
Yes, she did.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yes. I seen her raise a hand.
You have to come forward.
Ma'am, you have to come forward to the mic, please.
The site plan that we had before that we were trying to submit before, has that been submitted or not? Because I gave that to him, but you may have the site plan one.
If there was something submitted at the last hearing, it's in the record.
Yeah.
We have a lot of, there's okay. volumes, and I know there was binders and whatnot, so okay. there's quite a bit in the record. Thank you.
Quite a bit, ma'am. Okay.
I know one of them started off with this flower show. That was very nice, one of your things that you submitted in your testimony. The page opened up, the flowers. That was your cover.
Okay, there's all the opposition. So now is there...
Sweet Home.
What's that?
I think it said Home Sweet Home on it, actually.
What did?
Flower.
Yeah, oh. Right.
Okay, now call.
That's right, it did say that.
Chair's open, start the motion.
No one has an objection. I make a motion that we table this case until our next regular meeting.
Which will be on the 16th.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Rickers. That we table case number 11,296 until our next regular meeting, which will be on December the 16th. All those in favor of the motion, Mr. Workman?
Aye.
Mr. Rickards?
Aye.
Mr. Hudson?
Aye.
Again, Mr. Mills?
Aye.
And I, Mr. Calloway. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 11,296 is tabled.
I believe we have two other items on the agenda, do we not?
No. What's the other two?
The workshop and the calendar.
Did we do the workshop?
Did we made a vote or anything about it?
I'm sorry?
I don't believe we've had a vote or anything about it.
I think we can take one. I thought we saved it. Okay.
Folks, if you could